And even before you start in the journey with oncology, is if you can get back to, depending what new complication or symptom you have, if you can get back into the care of those who know your case the best. And in my situation, gastroenterology and that, because we're at a place where, and it's a decision that I made, it was probably late last week, is we have prescription drugs. So it's like every day is different. It's just, it's a crazy part. It's absolutely insane. Of what I'm going through is depending how the tumor positions itself. And mind you, this thing is stuck and sandwiched between the bowel. So your small intestine, large intestine, you know, your colon. So depending how gravity and things move around, it either is, oncology would say, it dances around. Other specialists would say, you know, it kind of, depending with gravity and moving, it kind of pushes itself around, however you want to say it, you know. Sometimes it will push on the colon to where, I mean, you're on medicine for, like, Linesse is one of them I've been on. There's a couple of new ones. To where, you know, you, let's just face it, you know, you end up with massive problems where you can end up having not just partial obstructions, but a full obstruction. You get to that point, we're talking serious stuff, because then you end up problems with septus that I've had, what, 3 times now. And then if it pushes the opposite way, and all of a sudden it releases, and all of a sudden you go from partial obstruction to everything is just like everything's moved. Then you end up problems to where you're constantly in the bathroom, and then you quickly get dehydrated. You become really, really sick, really, really fast. And it's like trying to find a happy medium or a balance between both. I've realized, and this has just been, what, three weeks, maybe 3.5 weeks, that this is new. This has never happened. Oncology went through my past records with gastroenterology. Did this happen before we started an oncology journey? Did this happen before the professor was able to diagnose me with RS and ovarian tumor? And then we knew we had to go in and we had a stage for ovarian cancer. And then we realized we couldn't get in there. And then all of a sudden now we had to change the whole, you know, game plan. And all they could provide me at that point was just, if we could just max out the radiation and hope to get the best chance to, I mean, obliterate, although they knew that, you know, you're never going to be able to get all the cells. That would require surgery to encase a tumor, and we just knew we were never going to get that way. But now it's like, and really it was a decision that I had to make for myself, is either we, A, since we don't have any surgical options anymore, oncology is not comfortable doing anything to remedy weight loss. There's not going to be any surgeries. There's not going to be any outpatient surgeries. I'm sorry, there's not going to be any lines. We're not going to do any feeding tubes. There's nothing left. And it was a quick decision. But then once I was in the hospital last, and we had to send off a lot of labs that I didn't know. Some of the labs I did not know. I knew they were sending some out of state that they could not perform at the hospital laboratory. And once this started quickly coming back, and even what we ran in the ER, it was just, I mean, they literally called me oncology. The other group called me while I was in there that they're not going to do anything. They're not going to intervene. They can't. And when things started coming back with the low counts of my platelets and that, and it's been with all the tests, and some of them, majority were abnormal, or levels were just way off. A lot of them we could see just from the graph, it's been a downhill change. It's never been normal. It never went back to normal. It's been just, let's say, a downhill spiral of labs and things that have come up not normal and that are connected to your immune system and your body just fighting against, you know, when you have things, especially tumors, and you've been through oncology and things progress, is your body continues to still fight and you start depleting, you know, the good cells and things that you need, like your platelets and that, and your white cell counts, your red cell counts, and as things progress, you can start seeing the changes, especially in your labs. So I was hopeful. I don't like using that word hope because it burned me again. But I was more surprised it came back as quick. And I don't know if I talked about this on Carrie Bridge. I know I done Carrie Bridge. I'm not sure if I talked about it here. But now that we've gotten to this point, it's like, okay, if we have me take this on the days that the tumor is sitting on my bowel or it's not sitting on my bowel, and then we take these prescription drugs for this on this day, and then the prescription's still in my system, and then the next day I'm the complete opposite. So then we're reaching for this drug to stop so I don't end up completely throwing my electrolytes and things off, which, I mean, literally we did. I kind of knew it was a stomach virus, but they were really, I think, in the ER, they were really thinking it was. And then the oncology on call and gastroenterologist, I mean, they kind of knew, no, this isn't. I don't think so. And then the lab started coming back, so we knew it wasn't. But, I mean, I made a decision, and, you know, I'm not sure, but I tend to think most patients with ovarian tumors, once things get to this point and they get really large and they are pushed and shoved down on your intestines and your colon, I think every patient has got to, in my opinion, must or have gone through what I am right now. I think it's just embarrassment and being uncomfortable not talking about it, which, I mean, there should be nothing to feel uncomfortable talking about. Because if you don't share your journey, especially with your health in situations like this, especially oncology patients, it's hard for other patients, because I know I've done a lot of research in that Googling. We all know our oncologists do not like us doing the online doctor. Sorry, I had to laugh because I've been told that a lot. They don't like when you do your own research. They're not saying that you shouldn't or you can't. It's just, they don't like you doing that. But in my situation, I explained to them that when I'm going through a new complication or a new symptom, like what I was experiencing is, sorry, put that on mute. If you're going through something and it's new, is how am I going to know what this is or if it's related if I can't Google search and find somebody else, you know, another patient, and that's going through the same thing and has been fighting as long as I have. And when the tumors start getting large like they were, even larger, to see that somebody else may be going through the same thing. When this happened, I didn't Google search this. I started Google searching when I was in the hospital. Now, mind you, I waited 4 days. I did not want to go because I felt like, oh, there's no way in hell they're going to release me. But as bad as I looked and as pale as I looked, and when I went, there were so many people coughing with the same type of, I don't know what kind of respiratory they had going on. But then there was another part of the hospital in the ER where there was people with stomach virus. But their symptoms, as they said, was not like mine. So they kind of knew this was probably connected, oncology related. But just to do the blood work, just to make sure. And lo and behold, when things came back, and I mean, we knew. But if it wasn't for me researching in the hospital and all of a sudden it was like typing in my symptoms and it was like severe constipation, severe diarrhea, every other day changing. This is not normal. That is not a stomach virus. Sorry, folks. You know, it's usually one or the other or food poisoning, things like that. And then the intense pain, which is isolated in the same area as the tumor. So I kind of knew. But it was amazing being able to research that. And I'm laying in the hospital bed and it's like, how many other women that defying the odds and they made it past prognosis. And generally it's 5 years in the situation where I was in where it got out of hand. It got out of hand because there was negligence with the hospitals that I went to. It's once again, the liability, as attorney explained it best, nobody wanted to take liability for it. reality, really. It's OBGYN that had this from the beginning. They knew about it. They're responsible. As a surgeon, they're responsible. It's not the trauma surgeon. It's OBGYN. It's a specialty surgeon. And they try to wash their hands of it too. So things got out of hand. This thing had 7 years to grow. By the time got to it, it was huge. And I was physically done. And people not taking it seriously and all those empty chairs, I'm not going to stress it enough. And the in-hospital cancer center, oncology center, there should have been every chair filled. I'm sorry on the phone today. Don't use excuses for your excuses. You were using nothing but excuses for your excuses. You knew where I was at. You were babysitting. I know that for a fact. Why not just be honest? There is no excuse, and there would be no valid excuse for every chair not to be filled. I don't get it. You know, I was put in a situation, uncomfortable situation, being around people that was uncomfortable, and there was some rifts going on. And somebody else had surgery for cancer, and I still showed up. And, you know, at that time, there was things going too. With, I mean, Eric had to deal with. We both showed up because that's what you do as an adult with some decency and morals that God gives you. We talk about holy rollers, what God gives you. That's right. You show up anyway, okay? And you put whatever your indifferences is of whoever's there and you put it aside and you show up, you know? That's what you do when you support people. I don't get how I supported you, but you didn't support me. We had the same radiation oncologist and you knew it and I know it and the oncologist knew it. There's no excuses but excuses. I'm sorry. Anybody hearing excuses on why there's no filled chairs? They're excuses. I'm sorry. I'm taking it to the grave. Hand on Bible is excuses. I had the blog going. There was pictures right above where that hospital was. You know, Jewish Hospital, Cincinnati, Ohio. All right. I have phone records. I was calling you after my treatments. You make no sense. I have the phone records. It's not a lie. But once again, evade, avoid at all costs, per my therapist. We are evading and avoiding at all costs. They're going to continue evading and avoiding at all costs. Period. You ain't never going to rhyme a reason. But it's not okay. It's not right. You know? People weren't taking it serious. And saying people weren't taking it serious. And I don't know what the hell you were telling people. But anybody believed anything but that it wasn't serious. What I went through 7 years ago, what I'm dealing with now. Again, I'm going to say, the circus is coming back in town. They're taking applications. You might want to put one in to be a clown. Because you look like a fool and a clown if you don't believe. I mean, if you believed anything but. I'm sorry, they just don't bring you in oncology and start maxing things out and doing things if it's not serious. You know? And that psychologically plays with people's minds too as a patient. When the people who should take it serious don't, you start not taking your health seriously yourself. I started doing that. And I got pulled back real quick by oncology. But most importantly, therapists. Because I was wise enough to know with Therapy Ohio that when I feel a certain way and people are doing certain things, that I need to speak up. You know, because people psychologically can play games with you and try to manipulate your way of thinking. And that is twisted itself. You need to go fill an application, next circus in town, and be a clown. Because that's not okay either. What I'm getting back to is talking about the size of the sucker and how it's grown back. And I can't say it grew back quick because really it didn't. But they weren't wrong when they said, if you make it to 7 years, which will be in April, this thing's going to be the same size, if not larger. And they were right. But now, because of where it's at, and we created more scar tissue by the radiation, to where now I have more scar tissue. And I asked oncology, both groups, I said, does scar tissue continue growing or does it, once you have intensive radiation and that, does it stop? Because it's a different type of scar tissue. It's worse than scar tissue of a surgery, you know, because radiation spreads, you know, and it you know, it goes in and it's, you know, it spreads. As one said, think of it like smoke, you know, it starts here and it spreads out, and it scrambles. I mean, let's face it, it scrambled all the way to my left lung and caused obstruction in the lower left lobe. and my lung's going to remain that way. We didn't know that until we went through nuclear testing. Why is the lower lobe scarred the way it is? That would only have come from radiation. They were able to narrow it down just by prior records and prior scans. But at the point now, when I was in the hospital, I was Googling and I realized other women had it. You know, I'm going to use that education and that knowledge because it really helped me to make important decisions where I'm at now. Is you start playing games with these prescriptions and you start taking this stuff for massive diarrhea and you start taking this stuff for massive, you know, we end up almost blocked. And it's nothing to be embarrassed or ashamed of because people with ovarian tumors and cancer and that go through this stuff, even colon cancer. You end up with massive tumors and that, and it just makes you wonder how many people pass away of complications. You're not hearing what the complication is, but wondering if it's sepsis related and a blockage because it literally pinches off, as I was explained, parts of the bowel. And you end up quickly in sepsis or your levels get, I mean, like my levels were so, I mean, everything gets thrown off because it's like, I used to have to go through treatments I called Drano. And this was before being diagnosed, before I started oncology journey and before I started treatments. And I was having to take a colonoscopy prep weekly. Well, we didn't realize what was going on then. Okay, I just knew that things were getting backed up every no matter what I ate or drank. Oh, now we realize, okay? But we can't do that now because we're in a different part of my journey. This is different now. We don't even have that option. So to be on a different drug every other day is insane. I tried it for 3 days and I'm like, no. Okay, it come to decision. You know, and you have to, if you can utilize your prior specialist because they're going to know, you know, especially if it's a specific complication you're having and it's GI related, then you want to get back if you've had a prior gastroenterologist before oncology, because oncology is controlling. They control and they lead everything now. They wanted to minimize and we wanted to reorganize my care. So we had, and they respectfully, we need to remove this person, or if this person wasn't one doctor, just wasn't doing what they were asking them to do. It took 3 times around, 3 strikes, you're out. They wanted me to replace them and they gave me some referrals and I did. Respectfully, I did, you know. Your oncology team is going to, at this point, they're going to lead and direct everything and that's the truth. But when it comes down to things that are new and complications and symptoms that you've never experienced before, like this is all new to me, you got to figure out what's going to be best for you. The problem is when you're constantly teeter-tottering every other day and you cannot go reaching for prescription medication that's going to do this extreme and then turn around and reach for prescription medications doing the other opposite extreme every other day or every 2 days. I don't care, every 3 days, because lots of medicine will linger. You know, end up with the extreme opposite too. So I decided late last week, I was like, I just can't do this. And I brought it to 3 of those that I know, friends of mine, out of state. And I was connecting with one this evening, but I can't do that. That's a dangerous game to play. I feel like I'll be in a worse scenario by doing so. If I continue on adding these medicines. So last week I just decided I'm not. And it's difficult because I notice the changes within myself. I'm tired a lot. I have to now take daily naps, which before I try to not do that so I can sleep better at night when I take my last meds to help me with the pain and that. But now it's like, oh, hell no. I'm tired as hell. I can't. You know, I can't fight the fatigue, you know, during the day. But I've just made a decision. I can't keep flipping like that, too. For those asking, I'm still really having to rely on Pedialyte. It has to be the Pedialyte, what is it? I'm not even looking at it. It's in the fridge. But what is it? The Advanced Pedialyte. It has more electrolytes in it, what, 33% more? And it has, what, pre and probiotics, I believe. I've been having to utilize that daily, the Pedialyte. Has it helped me balance out? I will say with electrolytes and things, yes. Prebiotics, probiotics, yes. I mean, that's a positive either way. But, yeah, your body is, you're still hungry, no matter how you look at it. You know, when your body's lacking a lot of things and you continue losing weight like I have, you know, you're still hungry, you know, you're still craving food, protein shakes, whatever. We got to remember protein shakes end up solid anyway once you drink them. They're just liquid the way that you're consuming them. But it's also the strange twisted way too. Working with a therapist is psychologically, as she said, then you start getting fearful of what you take in, because then you have to worry about being quickly obstructed, you know, and then when it goes opposite and it moves, then you're constantly in the bathroom all day. And then you have to worry about, you know, now you're quickly consuming all these calories the next day when this thing moves to get back the calories and the weight that you lost. I mean, it's the most insane thing I've ever been through. I've been wanting to podcast about this last week, but I'm like, how do you do it? You know, well, just say it. That's how I've always been throughout my journey with sharing, you know, my life over the years, is just say it. That's the best way to do it, is don't think about it. Just say it, you know. This is the most insane thing I've ever had to deal with my health, because it's so bizarre, because it's so extreme that you do not know daily how this thing's going to position itself. And then we have to remember, this is not liquid filled, this is solid filled. So this thing is big, it's large, and it gets heavy. It starts pushing down on things, and it's pinching things off. And it's crazy too, working with urology and that urology group, and you know, bringing in another specialty group that I had years ago, before we even knew this tumor was there. We had problems with the kidneys, you know, and then we realized things are all connected. And then, you know, when you realize your tube that drains, you know, comes down to help drain your kidney, we don't know when it's going to be blocked or when it's not, because this thing starts blocking it. So sometimes it's partially blocked. Sometimes it gets to be scary blocked, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, it affects everything. This is not to scare anyone. Well, it probably did. Any of the ladies out there, well, let's face it, if you've met prognosis, the gold standard, 5 years, okay, you're already blessed. You already know you're blessed. Let's face it. You know, I'm going on 2 years out, April. Okay, you know you're already blessed. You know all hell's about ready to break loose soon, because you know the scary complications where they couldn't even predict it, because nobody knows. No oncologist can predict what you're going to experience once you get past that prognosis mark. They just know if the thing continues to grow, you're going to end up with problems. And because radiation, you get a ton of scar tissue. You got to remember, you're going to have those problems. You're going to add that problem on top of the problems with the tumor itself, or tumors. And when they get really large, you know, and they're ovarian, they're in a bad spot to start with. Let's face it. They're in a position where your body bends, where you're sitting when you're traveling. When you lay down, there's not a left, there's not a right. It's hard to sleep. You know, you have to work with hospital palliative care or hospice care when you're at this point, you decide. And you have to help yourself too. You got to get care, and the whole point is to make you comfortable. Because I have to say, it took a hell of a lot for me to go, okay, I'm tapped out with the pain. Once that pain started progressing and working its way out of the original site because of the nerves and how everything's connected, I was done. And it's taken like 2 groups to get to the point now where I chose a group that oncology referred me to get things as best we can. But we keep having to change things up and increase things and change it up, because things continue evolving and pain evolves. And then to have this crazy complication, I had went through my totes. And, you know, 'cause you always have to make sure you get up and move around and stuff. And I was like, I pray to goodness I kept some of those jeans that were size 2. I was like, you know, I got to a good weight. My top weight I was getting, I got myself up to is 147. And I was lucky I got to that weight, because I figured if things progress, then the weight's going to go back down again, you know. And once it starts going down, it hasn't stopped. And they don't foresee me being able to get that weight back up. We just hope it continues slow on the weight loss. And it has, and I'm fortunate for that. But, you know, you start getting your clothes that, you know, you'd be able to wear in, like, what, 10th grade, 9th grade? That's crazy. You start seeing your weight coming close to, like, high school weight. And then you add this crazy complication, you know. Like I said, you know, if I could had that crystal ball and be able to predict and see where you were going to be at after you've made the gold standard 5 years, you know, what do you foresee and what do you experience? You know, sometimes you wish you could, like, for me, plan so far ahead, you know. Some things I wish I would have done as far as traveling that I kept blowing off that I should have done. What really makes me more, I wouldn't say angry, because I, you know, went past anger. I wouldn't say frustrated. I'd say more disappointed in people is the same toxic circle and the drama and the troubles that they created over the years, when that time, instead of dealing with y'all, should have been spent on myself of enjoying life. And I'm going to say this respectfully and as nice as I can, is you took that time selfishly away from me, because I should have been focusing on happier times. And I think every single person listening to this can agree with that. There's no respect for me or what I was going through. And there is no respect you gave me for my health. There was no respect or decency you gave me as a human being. But you took time away. That is valuable time. And I don't know why I allowed you all to do it. Because that's not okay. Now, if I could, you know, go back, I'd change a lot of things, you know. But, you know, when you're at this point, you realize you can't go back. But if you can give good advice, sound advice, you know, because you don't want other, I wouldn't want to have anybody else get through what I had. You deal with all that drama and toxicity and while you're dealing with things and struggling with your health. No, I didn't say suffering, because I'm only saying that. Struggling, you know. And people that love you respect you, you know. People on totem pole, especially this family, loves you. They also respect you. It's not a question or can you. It's automatic. We should all be doing that. I don't know what happens to society. That's all I gotta say. I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know if it takes you to be sick to see what kind of world and how people are that we live in. I don't know if you have to get to that point. I'm not sure. Maybe you don't realize it until you get sick. I don't know. But getting back to, I made a decision. I'm just not. I can't be playing with prescription drugs one extreme or another. And, you know, working with my gastroenterologist I had for a long time. And thankful to be able to, you know, still be able to get their expertise. Because, you know, they really know the GI part, gastroenterology part with my health. Before I figured this all out. But, and so the tough times is true that you gain the wisdom. And wisdom comes from experience. And the best wisdom, unfortunately, comes through the worst experience, the worst times you'll ever have in your life, is the greatest wisdom and knowledge that you'll ever gain. And there cannot be anything truer than true on that statement. It's bizarre. It's crazy. This is a strange complication of this thing. That's not to say that something else can't surface, you know. But, you know, been around, you ever be around, you're around people that are sick and they're in a part of this journey and, you know, you're like, they don't look like themselves anymore. Or they look tired or their complexion doesn't look right, you know, because their body's drained, you know. As I was told, when the longer people fight, the more that they're taking, you know, it takes a lot of the body to keep fighting and keep pushing, and it drains you. So your complexion starts not looking right, and, you know, and you don't start looking, you start not looking like yourself. And that's part of life, and that's a part of how it goes, folks. But, you know, I really believe that the mind is truly last to go, because, you know, mentally, you would be amazed at things that you can overcome, you know, even though when you know there's no cure and there's no hope, you know, you can still overcome things that if you focus, you know, truly focus in and mentally, you know, stay strong, you can get through a lot of the tough times. But it's not easy. You know, it's not easy at all. But people, you need to start. If you haven't already, I don't care what kind of, you know, journey I'm talking about. It doesn't have to be a specific medical journey, but you got Caring Bridge, you got other social media platforms and that where people share their journey and their story. And don't mind the people that are ignorant, that literally, someone says sharing their stuff, they're just doing it for attention, they're doing it for blah, blah, blah. People who say stuff like that are the most crazy-ass people in the world. I don't know what possesses, somebody didn't get enough attention when they were young. I don't know why people do that or say that. People who share their journey are the most brave people in the world. They're putting their life out there. You know, they do it for themselves, but also they're doing it for other people. And that's a hell of a gift that you're giving, you know? So people like me, when I'm in that hospital and I'm going through something that's not a stomach virus, it's not the flu, and Googling it and then realizing, oh, okay, well, there's other women who went through treatments, other women like myself, and end up with this sucker getting out of control again. And lo and behold, we end up with the extreme because it's pushing on the bowels or it's releasing. And now I see the extremes of every day I'm going through isn't so extreme after all. If these brave women didn't share their journey, whether it's daily, and who cares if it's daily? The more the better. The more knowledge that people like me and other women can get when we've never been in this part of our journey yet is the more relief and the more help and the more that we feel validated and having other people gone through what we have that we felt under, we feel understood. You know, because people that haven't gone through this or they have great health and they don't realize, a lot of people have great health, don't realize what a gift they have. You know, that's something money is never going to buy you. Sorry. It could buy you great hospitals, but when your health deteriorates, it doesn't even matter if you have a great hospital or can buy the most expensive healthcare you can find out there. When it's done, it's done. It's not going to matter at the end of the day. Trust me. But if more people would just put their stories and journeys out there and don't mind the people that are ignorant. Ignorant's about the best word I can say, ignorant, you know? Or people who treat like journeys as like, I don't know, of competition or jealousy or something. I don't know. It's mentally, as my therapist says, a mentally twisted mind to make anything other than somebody's journey of sharing as a positive, of twisted minds to take it and turn it into a negative thing or a jealousy thing or a competition thing is very twisted individual. That's a disturbed person, as I was told, disturbed. You have to have more people, you know, don't be afraid to share your journey, you know, and you're dealing with chronic illness, you know, and for me, it's always been a sense of relief to be able, back when I had the blog, to blog, or the podcast to, or the, you know, Caring Bridge to journal or to podcast. It's always been helpful to me. It's a release. It also helps me to go back, you know, on the good times and remember, or, you know, even the bad times and figure out, or even to go back and see where was I at, you know, where was I at a year ago this time, or where was I at a couple years ago, you know, don't mind people, you know, don't mind people who, you know, that don't mind or respect people that are sick in the first place. Because people like that need to have no respect for anyone sick, you know. And you can always pinpoint the people out who have no empathy, sympathy, or no damn heart to start with, you know. Ignore them, you know. You keep doing you, you know. Keep putting your journey out there, you know. Get out there for those who started, get out there. I promise you, it is... it's a lot of work. It really is. It gets to the point where it's very easy. But it's a release. It's therapeutic. And it not only helps you, but you know, you're helping out so many other people. And not just other patients, but those who have the heart and they care. And they want to support those that they're with that are sick. So they can be better people, better caregivers, better nurses, better doctors, you know, better loved ones, you know, better... partners of life, you know, spouses, boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, best friends. You know, just what I'm saying is just don't be afraid to share your journey out there. You know? And by all means, like I said, you know, anything's possible. Once you make it past prognosis, anything's possible. You can never rule anything out. And, you know, I always question is, why didn't oncology let me know? And I don't understand. And what complications? You know, it's always the first thing. You know, when you're released, can't do anything else more for you. You're released. Okay, what am I going to look forward to? What should I look for? I mean, what am I going to deal with? What kind of complication? You know, when they don't tell you, it's because they don't know. You can't take it personally. They don't know. And when every patient is truly unique and different, and they say it, they mean it. No patient is alike. And no matter how great the oncology group, oncology center, oncology specialist is to each and every patient, they don't know what you're going to deal with. Anything's possible. But, you know, when you get, once again, that talk, and it's that real serious talk, and we can't do anything else for you, this is your time, folks. I can't stress it enough to say it as many times as I possibly can. This is a time to start planning ahead. Plan ahead for your health. And most importantly, plan ahead for your life.